All right, great to have you back with us on the beginning of this Memorial Day weekend. We bring in Susan Slusser of the Chronicle. And, Susan, I must say I've been looking forward to our conversation all morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Marty?
Very, very good. And what a bizarre world we live in baseball and the rest of the world. And there's so much going on that you and I can chat about. But first of all, the Mets series. You know, the Tuesday night game, the Wednesday game, and it came at the right time for the Giants. And look at Jock Peterson. He went wild. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, really, the Tuesday night game was just incredible, you know, and what a performance, the individual performance. And the fact that they were able to kind of carry that momentum, which is, you know, not really a thing sometimes in baseball, right, into the next day. And Peterson starts against a lefty and homers in that one. That was great. It's a shame that going into a series at a sort of a second-tier team that they couldn't carry that in. But, man, a weird week continues to stay weird and maybe get weirder.
Well, not only that. First of all, we have the rain delay, which is 2 hours. Then we had the fireworks before the game. Now, how about that one, the fireworks before the game? You know, this is a little unusual. We've had fireworks at 3 in the morning. I remember that. But not before the game, but the spotlight continues on Jock Peterson last night, and I thought that was interesting. He gets into it with Tommy Pham, and I'm sure you've heard his explanation of what happened, and he took a lot of time to explain everything. What was your reaction to Jock Peterson and Tommy Pham? Yeah, go ahead.
It's a weird one, yeah. I mean, there's certainly, you know, tons of past instances of weird spats in baseball, mm-hmm. right? I covered one with the A's a few years ago where Danny Valencia and Billy Butler got into a really bad fight over an equipment, something that Butler said to an equipment rep. You know, the strangest things can set stuff off, but a fantasy football argument spilling into a on-field altercation, that's new for me. Hey, maybe it's happened in the past and nobody's known about it, but that is wacky. So yeah, I mean, it's obviously the good thing is Peterson did not respond in kind. You know, he got smacked and said, like, okay, backed off, and he didn't get sat down for the game. Tommy Pham did. So I think that tells you pretty much all you need to know about that weirdness. You know, but Gabe Kapler writing his blog entry about deciding that he's going to I guess he didn't mention it in the blog, but writing very strongly about his feelings about gun control and the need for it, and how upset he is over the inaction on that issue, and then saying before the game that he is not going to go out during the national anthem, which I actually think is an interesting way to handle it, right? It's not quite as provocative. Maybe he's taking a knee, which he has done in the past. He's taken a knee at times in the past. An interesting way to, he just won't be out there. And you don't have to be out there. I think people know in baseball, you know, sometimes you only see a handful of guys out for the national anthem. There's some teams where everybody's out there for the national anthem. So there's no requirement. And he obviously feels strongly about this issue, as I think many of us do, considering what's gone on in Texas this week. And I applaud him for that. But yeah, it was a strange day. It was a strange day. And then the game wound up being kind of a
really?
Flat and weird. And yeah, that's a strange one. I think they just kind of like to move on, really. It's important. These are the kind of series that are really important for them. They need to beat the teams that they have to beat to be able to stick around in the NL West.
Well, the Reds were 0-13 against the National League West until last night, and Ashcroft pitched an excellent game, and he outpitched Rodon, frankly. And the Reds played a better game last night. Let's talk about Kapler for a second. Because, you know, when Colin Kaepernick did this 4 or 5 years ago, he was blackballed. You know, you never saw him again. And here's a manager of a baseball team not just taking a knee with everybody else, but saying very strongly, like Steve Kerr did, like Chris Russo did, and others in the NBA have said, he took a real position on it as the manager of the team, the leader of the team. I think it's pretty dramatic, really.
It is. You know, I think a lot of people know Gabe's background. He has always been pretty forthright in talking about his progressive values. His parents were both activists, and his mom continues to be a feminist and, you know, took part in lots of protests. And That's his family background, and he, I think he's always going to speak up when he feels like there is injustice. As I mentioned before, he has taken a knee over racial issues in the country. So I'm not surprised by this, but I do, you know, I do think it's important for people to hear different voices. And then, you get the, like, stick to sports crowd and all of that. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It kind of depends on what side opinions people tend to be on, whether they say stick to sports or stick to acting or whatever it is. It's just, you know, hey, I don't like whatever it is that you're saying. That's one of the reasons I think it's important to keep the conversations going, to be frank. I think, you know, we're all entitled to our opinions. You know, we're all voters. We are all members of this society. But when somebody with a microphone has the ability to explain their position, I think that's a good thing. And I think Gabe did so very well in his blog post, and he continued to do so in his pregame comments yesterday.
Yep, a very interesting man to cover, and you've covered so many managers mm-hmm. in all your years. He may be the most unique, I would say, you've ever covered.
Yeah, he definitely is. He's very different, very, you know, new school, old school. It gets a little bit trite and is maybe too much of a shorthand, but he definitely thinks so far outside the box. I mean, the best example, which we've discussed before, certainly is the unwritten rules thing, which is so wildly different from most managers' thoughts on that. Even some of the younger managers are kind of like, wait, whoa, that's out there. But I like that he is willing to examine every side of an issue in an effort to make the team better, you know, find any potential advantage that the Giants can. And then in something like this, you know, maybe hopefully make the world a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Stand, take a stand for something that you believe in and hope maybe that you can help affect some positive change.
Boy, interesting. A pleasure to talk with Susan Slusser this morning. I was looking forward to this kind of conversation with you. All right, so now the game starts. All right, we've got, you know, things happening before the game. We've got the fantasy football slap. We've got rain. We've got fireworks. And now the game starts. And you get to the eighth inning, and they bring in Jake McGee because, you know, it's 3-1. They want to keep it there. And all of a sudden, the umpires are talking, and you can see there's trouble. And Jake McGee's not on the lineup card. He can't pitch. This is an embarrassing moment.
It's really embarrassing. Yeah, that's a new one for me, too. You know, I've seen guys bat out of order. You know, it happens, you know, once every couple of years somewhere in baseball, something like that will happen. Or, you know, there's some sort of switch that gets messed up. We see that every now and then. But that's flat not having somebody on the card and ineligible to play, period. I have not seen that before. I'm actually, honestly, kind of surprised I haven't, because you would think that would be something that would happen now and then. But it is unusual. And, you know, the Reds were on it. You know, they're the ones that have to say something. And clearly they were right on it. Somebody spotted it probably pretty early on when they saw the lineup card.
Well, the Giants have used, I think, 47 players so far this year. I think, what would they use, 65 in 2020, I think. They've used 47 already. So with players coming back and forth every day, I'm surprised it hasn't happened before.
Yeah, that's what you'd think this is something that because, you know, you see sometimes some things that are slightly off, slightly wrong on lineup cards. You would think sometimes that somebody would just get left off, and that's a first. So, you know, it happens. It's just a mistake. We all make mistakes. You know, players make mistakes. Coaches make mistakes. Certainly there was, you know, it's just one of those things. But it's unfortunate, you know, on a day like yesterday, particularly unfortunate because things weren't going all that well for the Giants as it was, and then that happens.
No, and then Joey Bart got his catcher's interference. That was sort of the topping of the cake when that happened yesterday. So what else? There's nothing left to happen after that.
No.
So
that's a couple defensive miscues and, you know, a base running, not really necessarily a mistake if you guys thought the ball was going to drop. But, you know, just some stuff that, you know, it seemed like everything kind of worked against the Giants. And you're going to have games like that. Hey, maybe you get all of that out of the way in one game, right?
Well, they've lost 8 of 12. Let's get your evaluation of the team right now. And, of course, you know, people, I had fun on Twitter last night. I said, you know something, I'll be surprised if the Giants lose any of these games. And, of course, the whole night people were saying, don't jinx the Giants, you know, the whole Twitter thing. You know, are you surprised yet after the game? And I said, yes, I was surprised. But this is a ball club now that's, you know, got a little trouble. They've lost 8 of 12. The starting pitching hasn't been great. What's your take on the team right now?
Well, you know, they're in one of those stretches where when they're getting the hitting, they're not always getting the pitching. When they're getting the pitching, they're not always getting the hitting. Those stretches you really want to minimize. Their defense has really been the surprisingly poor area that's hurting them a lot, sometimes inadvertently, right? I wrote the other day, I think many of us did, wrote about Tyler Rogers. Actually made all the pitches he wanted to the other night, gives up 7 runs. That's unfathomable. If you're going like, hey, did you make any mistakes? No, I didn't. He just got ground ball after ground ball all to the wrong spot or hit so softly a team with some fast runners was capitalizing on it, you know, and that's got to be so aggravating. You get really the weakest contact possible and it winds up in a hit after hit. So some of it has just been misfortune, but the defense isn't good. And this is a team that has to have good defense. You know, they rely on their pitching and their defense. And when their offense has not been consistent and the defense is poor, wow. You're not going to go very far like that in the major leagues. You're just not. That, to me, is what they have to shore up quickly and immediately. And I don't know how they do that. I really don't. Some of it has been injury related. They have had an awful lot of guys, as you mentioned, coming in and out of the lineup. And a lot of them have not worked together. I remember at one point we were on the road somewhere, and one of the kind of various utility infielders who was new walked in, and one of the other regular infielders asked the PR guy, who's that guy? And I was thinking, like, that's the guy that's going to be playing right next to you. Like, you know, they've never seen each other. That's not going to help either. So, that to me is the biggest concern right now is the defense, because offense can come and go and pitching gets into some weird stuff, but defense should be there for you every day.
Good point. Now, one thing about Rogers, he doesn't strike anybody out. And sometimes as a reliever, you got to strike somebody out with people on base. And he's a pitch to contact guy, and the contact is so weak that he gets in trouble, but you got to strike people out every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think the feeling with him, right, is if there's guys on base, he can get a ground ball double play any day, any time. And he probably had that the other day, maybe if the ball, the paddle that goes off Padlo's chest gets fielded. He was caught a little bit in between. It did take a tricky hop. Nobody at all was pointing any fingers at Padlo, but I think there are some nights he makes that play. There's probably a good chance that some other third baseman make that play. So, you know, he was kind of doing what he needed to do. And when he's got guys on base, he has to get double play ball.
Mm. Susan Slessor with us. You wrote a wonderful story just a day or two ago about Roger Angel, who just passed away. And of course, he is in the writer's wing of the Baseball Hall of Fame, but not a beat writer. And it wasn't that simple getting him in there. You were instrumental in making this happen for one of the greatest writers of all time in baseball. He wrote for The New Yorker, Roger Angel. Tell us about it.
Yeah, in my mind, the greatest, not just baseball writer, but sports writer of all time. And I just say an all-time talent, national treasure. And I grew up reading Roger Angel from about the age of 9, and always was just, you know, magnificent work, just indescribably great. And I was, when I first started covering baseball regularly, I was surprised he was not, you know, in the writer's wing of the Hall of Fame. And I asked, and a couple of people said, oh, it's because he's not a member of the BBWAA. And I didn't really think that much about it afterwards. I thought, like, okay, well, he's a magazine writer. I guess that makes sense. Back then, even the Sports Illustrated writers weren't in the BBWAA because you had to have a daily coverage component, and that was a weekly. So when things changed with our membership, as there are more and more online outlets, and Sports Illustrated, for example, wound up having sort of a daily online presence, all the online outlets got on. And I said at that point, like, well, hey, maybe it could Roger at some point now be considered? And Jack O'Connell, who you know, of course, who's the secretary treasurer of the Baseball Writers Association and very involved in the Hall of Fame process. He makes the announcements every year. He said, actually, you don't have to be in the BBWAA to be honored. And at that point, I kind of went on a mission and started lobbying the New York chapter to get him nominated, just assuming that he had to come out of the New York chapter because, you know, he works at the New Yorker.
Right.
And they just were so reticent. They were, it was a sort of a, well, we've got this whole list of old guys that we've got to nominate first. And he didn't, he never had to write on a deadline and he never covered Baseball Daily. And I just thought like, oh my gosh, how, some of it was kind of petty and just like, oh my gosh, you should be so proud of having someone like that, you know, in your area. So at some point I finally said, hey, could we nominate him from the Bay Area? And Jack O'Connell said, yeah, sure. So, and that was it. From that, it was a done deal from there on because we rushed to get that done. And it was an honor. It was an absolute privilege and honor because nobody's ever been better. If anybody out there is listening and has not read Roger Angel, just, you know, any of his baseball essays are just, they're word perfect. Yeah, staggering.
I love the story. I never knew any of this. And I'm glad that you could, you know, bring it to light and that you could get some credit for it. And also for Chris Haft and for Daniel Brown, of course, you know well, for the job they did in making the presentation. So very good. Congratulations, Susan. That's good work.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, honestly, it's my proudest professional achievement. I was so worried that he would not get honored in his lifetime because, you know, he was 94 when it finally happened. And he was able to go and enjoy it. And, you know, members of his family were there. And it was
nice.
Truly, absolutely, truly wonderful because he means a lot to, I think, baseball writers everywhere, but baseball fans and sports fans and, you know, readers of the New Yorker, which is just tremendous. So, yeah.
I love
Thanks,
it.
Marty. Thanks for letting me talk about Roger.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a good story in this crazy world that we live in. Well, a pleasure having you on this morning. As I said, I was looking forward to getting your thoughts about it, and we'll catch up with you again. And as Bruce Jenkins said about Roger Angel, I thought he's going to live forever. And, of course, 101. Wow. All right. Have a great afternoon, and take care of yourself. We'll catch up in a week or two.
Thanks, Marty. I appreciate it.
Oh, as always. All right. Susan Slusser of the Chronicle. Boy, interesting story today. So many storylines. We've got so much to talk about, which we will. Bill comes up next with Jeff Brantley. Remember him, the Cowboy. And he's a radio TV analyst for the Cincinnati Reds. And we'll catch up with Bill and Jeff Brantley right after this on the Sports Leader.